We work very closely with our lenders, asset management team, construction team, on calls every month and do the draws and let them know how we're reallocating numbers. We need more money for this. It's a very involving process, but I can sleep at night knowing that I know where the money's going, I know what I'm doing, and not relying on someone else.
If you have over $200,000 sitting stagnant in your bank, retirement account, or home equity, then you're literally losing money. On this show, you learn how to get that money working for you consistently and conservatively. Learn to grow your nest egg with your host, Sean Winslow. Let's dive in.
Welcome back to another Multifamily Monday episode. I'm your host, Sean Winslow, and this is the Multifamily Monday Podcast. What's going on, everybody? You know the drill. Coming at you on Mondays with all things multifamily real estate investing. And today I got another rock star guest, my friend, good buddy, Adrian Salazar. Kind of a funny story. So Adrian and I got connected 3 years ago by a mutual friend, our buddy Ed. And this was like height of the pandemic, right? Not much going on. And this was before really activity and assets went through the roof. This was just like people still bunkered at home. And we got connected. And it was when I was starting this podcast. He was actually the first person I ever recorded. And unfortunately, that episode is long gone. It was lost in the ether when I had a laptop that just decided to die one day. But anyways, he and I, we were filming this episode. He was actually in a 16 unit that he had just bought and was essentially house hacking. He was self-managing. It was his first actually acquisition deal. He started off doing wholesaling single families and then wholesaling multis, but this was the first one he actually kept. So it's kind of cool now to come full circle. He's at nearly 1,000 doors now. He invests throughout Texas, around San Antonio, where he's from, and he's from McAllen, but in that area. And so this was a really fun conversation. We talked about how he got there, man. He started when he was 17 years old, he started. In one sense or another of in the business and real estate world. As I said, he got into single family wholesaling, got a mentor, went to meetups, then got into multifamily wholesaling, and then just realized like that the people making the real money is like, yeah, he was making good money like doing wholesaling, and it's very transactional. A lot of taxes, right? And people making the real money were the ones actually that he was wholesaling to. So he wanted to do that. And him and his partner got into it. And again, now they're up almost 1,000 doors, vertically integrated. Property management, construction management, asset management. So we get into all these things, how he's able to find these deals. Most of his deals, I think he said about 90% of them were direct to seller. So he was cold calling, driving for dollars, and just straight out hustling everybody. And this is a great episode to learn some tactical stuff, both from that aspect, but also from property management, construction management, what can really move that dial on your property and on your business. So this is an action-packed show, guys. Really fun one to record. I think you're gonna get a lot of value out of it. And as always, guys, if you do get value, please, please share with someone who else could get value from this. Friend, family, colleague, whoever it may be. That's the point of the show. I want to get in front of as many ears and eyes as possible to help others create the life they want to create. And like Adrian, I feel like this is the best asset class to do that. And so if you haven't, please share it with a friend. Also, if you haven't, please leave a rating review. But without further ado, here's Adrian Salazar. Hey, Adrian, man, welcome to the show, my friend.
Thanks, man. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, man. Thanks for taking time out of your schedule. So listeners, I just want to give a little background here. So Adrian and I have known each other coming up on 3 years now. We both kind of got into larger multifamilies around the same time. We got introduced by a friend of ours, a mutual friend, Ed. Shout out to Ed. Hope you're doing well, my friend. And yeah, I was telling him this, he was the first person I hit record on podcasts. And unfortunately, it got lost in the ether when I had a laptop that died. So we're back here. Kind of the cool story about it is he was recording it in one of his first deals. I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Adrian, but I believe it was 14 units that you were essentially house hacking, living out of. And now we're going to get into where you are. Now you have, I know you're hundreds of units, but have you broken the 1,000 yet?
Not yet. So we're at 930. So I've done over 1,000 through wholesales, but right now, what we own is 930.
It's crazy, guys. Just think about that. 3 years ago, that this guy is house hacking a 14 unit, doing a podcast with me, and now he's got essentially, 1,000 units. It's just wild. So, Adrian, if you don't mind, just giving the listeners your background.
Yeah, dude. Cool. So, normal average kid growing up, average income family, average income city, but above average goals and dreams. I picked up personal development when I was my teen, 16, 17 years old. Got introduced to Tony Robbins, Jim Rohn, Napoleon Hill, all the personal development gurus out there that I had no idea about. And so I started really conditioning my mind at an early age, was a part of direct selling, a direct selling company, and got involved and built a big organization. And I realized that I had the power to build a business globally as long as I set my mind to it, right? And so one day that company went out of business and I was online looking at an ad on Facebook, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. I knew who he was because I had done some reading on him when I was younger. And so it's crazy. If I wouldn't have done that reading to know who Robert Kiyosaki was, I wouldn't have seen the ad and I wouldn't have gone to this event. So I showed up to a real estate event and they were talking about pre-foreclosures, wholesaling, making $20,000, $40,000. And so light bulbs went off and started meeting people in the room, shaking hands, kissing babies, and found a mentor who was willing to take me under his wing and basically worked for free for him for a year and a half, wholesaling houses.
How old were you?
I was 17.
Wow.
I was 17, yeah, going into 18 years old in San Antonio, Texas, studying full-time college. And I started going to RIAs. I was a part of a fraternity that I had to kind of pull down. If not, I couldn't do both. I couldn't be a part of the fraternity full-time and still do real estate because it just is contradicting, you know, in college. So
yeah.
Chose the path of freedom and wealth and legacy and making money and got really involved in the RIAs. I was the first one there, last one to leave, went to all the volunteering events and realized something common across everyone in the rooms is that no one really knew how to find deals and no one really went out there and did aggressive stuff to go and find these motivated sellers. So I had no money, no credit, no experience. But I had a mentor who told me if I learn how to find deals off market, direct to seller, that's how I can start. And so did some homework, took massive action, generated a bunch of leads. They saw value in me, took me under their company. And I was working with them for about 4 years. I was finding off market single family houses. We did about 90 in 4.5 years and got really good at it, built a business. But I hit a peak, man. I hit a peak and I was making money single family wholesaling, but it wasn't very scalable. I wanted wealth. I wanted residual income. I wanted passive income. I wanted to build my portfolio, my net worth. And I didn't really know about multifamily at the time, but my business partner, he engineer mentality. I brought him into single family. We did a couple of wholesale deals together and he has an engineer mentality. So he's very analytical and decided, hey, how many houses am I going to have to do in order to reach true financial freedom? And that's when he kind of started searching, found multifamily podcasts, started listening, sent some mailers, did a 24 unit off market and made over $300,000. And so that check really just kind of made me go all into multifamily. I ditched single and went all in. And about 5 years ago, we bought our first deal, 16 units, moved in. House hacked, not 5 years ago, it was a couple of years ago, but 5 years ago is when I got introduced to multifamily and moved into the unit and did management, did leasing, did maintenance, and started learning the business and started calling more leads, got a 32 unit off market, bought it, got a 10 unit off market, bought it, 88, 28, 42, 43, 200s, 300s, and now we have 1,000 units. In the last 4 years, we've been grinding. We are vertically integrated and we do everything in-house. So it's been a journey. It's been fun.
What a journey, man. It's an impressive journey. So I remember when we were talking, like we both were just getting into it at that time when we first started talking. And now to see where you've gone, and it is a journey. It's a fun one too. And it's just really cool to see. So how are you finding these sellers to call? What's breakdown like from a tactic perspective? Like how are you doing that? You getting lists, skip tracing, and then cold calling, mailers? How are you doing it?
Yeah. So basically what I did was pull a market that I wanted to look at and buy at. So picked three or four. I picked a couple that I knew, pulled a list through a bunch of list sources and crossed them all, made one because some list sources don't pull some. So I pulled it from 5 or 10 different list sources, made a master list in 4 markets and started getting phone numbers, emails, mailing addresses, started writing postcards, started texting them, started voicemail dropping, cold calling. You know, I did everything, man, and people were responding. And so that's kind of when I said, there's something here. And so we started basic underwriting, got a little calculator together, started underwriting it to a 8 cap, 9 cap. And then the idea would be to wholesale it for a 6 or 7 cap and make that spread. So that's kind of what I started doing at first. And then I got comfortable with it and we decided to take the risk to buy our first deal. So again, I started wholesaling apartments first just to get the rhythm and language and know what they look for and know the process because it's a little bit different than single family.
Yeah.
And so we made decent money. And then we said, dude, we're in this business to get out of active income. Like, we're in this business to stop wholesaling. Like, let's buy it.
Right.
You could have made a couple hundred thousand on wholesale fee on the 16 unit, but I mean, what more money? It wasn't going to do anything. We wanted to build wealth. We wanted to build a track record. So we pulled the trigger on that 16 unit and we haven't looked back ever since.
Love it, man. Yeah. Moved from that transactional business where very tax heavy to business now where, like you said, generational wealth.
Yeah.
How many wholesale deals did you guys do before you decided that you need to start holding these things?
We did five.
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 Okay.
We did an 8-unit first. We did 14 unit in Kingsville, 8-unit in McAllen, a 32 unit in Converse, a 24 unit in San Antonio, and a 12 unit in San Benito. And then we had some capital. And so we went out looking for our next deal. We attended some events and felt comfortable. And yeah, we spoke with a few lenders and they were willing to do it. So Let's go, right? That's deal number one.
Yeah, man. So like, yeah, walk us through that mindset. Like, what were you guys thinking? Like you said, you could just wholesale it and make a couple hundred. And then also, like, was it just natural for you guys to keep everything in-house and self-manage?
No. So I'll answer first question. So the mindset, right? Going into being comfortable into the 16 unit, we were attending a lot of meetups, multifamily meetups. We had decided, I think that's the key word here, is we decided that we were going to be multifamily investors and buy multifamily apartments. And so we made that decision and we held each other accountable to it. And so we started attending events. We started attending masterminds and networking events and meetups. And I started putting myself in those rooms. So when I started seeing other people in these rooms having success, co-GPing, GPing, lead sponsoring, my confidence levels went up. And that's kind of when I started seeing, like, why am I going to keep wholesaling? It's not. Like, I want to buy them. And they would ask me too, like, how many units do you own? How many? And I would, none, right? I didn't own any. So it sucked. So I kind of just wanted to like make that decision and make that change in my life to start owning these things. And we really didn't know how we were going to raise the money. We didn't know how it was all going to turn out. My business partner didn't even get to walk it and see it. I was the only one. And we just trusted each other and went under contract. I think it was like $100 of earnest money. So there was really no risk.
Yeah.
So yeah. So in the process of that 16 unit, we were speaking with lenders and everybody, no one really wanted to take us serious. I mean, they would put us in the lobby and wait, and there wasn't even any coffee and cookies. Like, there was nothing. They would just put us in the corner. And that really, like, I still remember it very clearly to this day, like how it made me feel.
Right.
And I didn't like that. And for me, what fires me up and drives me is when someone just doesn't believe that I can do it. Right. So that really turned me on. And we ended up calling around with different banks, different loan brokers. We didn't know anything about anything. And one decided to pull the trigger and we got family and friends to sign on the debt. And we raised money from people who trusted us from single family. So we bought it for 500,000, 16 units. And we raised 200K, probably a little under 200K from family and friends, people who trusted us. Just, I mean, we had no experience.
Right.
So it was very tough. It's probably one of the hardest raises. I mean, now we're raising millions of dollars, but the first ones are always the toughest. And yeah, we bought the deal and I was just looking at the numbers earlier. We sold it for a 40% annual return, 80% in 22 months.
Wow.
So it was pretty cool. It was a nice first deal, but I was in there and during the process, the lenders were asking us for third-party managers. So we went out looking for them because again, we were not experienced. They wanted to make sure that someone was managing the asset who was experienced. And we hired a third-party manager. And we just got the ball rolling. But, you know, I was very involved, very control freak. I was excited. I wanted to be there all the time. I wanted to see it full. And so I was very involved. And this manager was just not. So then we hired another manager. And again, we were doing more. We cared about it more. Like, I have a responsibility for my investors.
Right.
When I see that the property is not being squeezed, I freak out. I have an anxiety attack. So I was having a lot of those. So I told my partner, like, dude, let's just go. And he was actually traveling. He was traveling on the other side of the world.
For work.
And so Mauricio was traveling. And I was like, bro, we're going to take management in-house. And he knew that I had it. And so he was like, dude, do whatever you need to do. And ended up firing the second one and took it all in-house. And this was 3 years ago. And yeah, I was the regional. I was the property manager. I was the leasing agent. I was the asset manager, along with my partner, of course. But I was here boots on the ground. And then we hired our first manager after we bought another deal. And so I was kind of managing it for like, till we got to 50 units myself. So it's cool because I always recommend go in there, go walk the deal, go speak with the contractors, go speak with the vendors, like see what's going on. That's how you're going to learn. And it still helped me to this day. Everyone I bring onto the team, I can tell them like, I actually did that. So
yeah
man, fast forward, we have 25, 30 employees now working for us. We're managing 14 properties. We have 300 under contract right now. And the team is growing and we like having the control. We're 98% occupied across all 930 units. It's a lot more work. It's definitely not, if you're trying to not do anything, I mean, vertical integration is probably not for you. But if you are have the time, have the energy, and I have that team culture, you know, team aspect of things, you can really make something happen. And right now, I have a lot of buddies who are operators operating thousands of units, and they're having a lot of issues with third-party property management companies, and they can't do anything about it, right? Like they can't just go in there and start changing things. Like there's a process. So I didn't really like that. And yeah, I mean, our team is hungry, motivated, and I'm excited, man. I'm excited for the growth.
Yeah, just like your buddies, I can speak on that too. So it's something that I toss back and forth. But you kind of already answered it, but I wanted to ask you, do you think starting out that way has helped you scale the way you have, just being intimate with the whole process to your point of like when you're training someone, like I've done this before, so I know what it takes, that's helped you scale?
100%. Yeah. Especially even when we're like underwriting, right? Because if you're underwriting a deal and you don't really know what you can do with it, it's a lot easier and more comfortable when we're seeing how much we can push rents or seeing where we can cut costs or staffing, right? Payroll line items, like insurance, all that stuff. Like we know, right? We've done it. We've been there. So we can adjust accordingly. And yeah, I mean, being aggressive, boots on the ground has taught me a lot. I think you can only learn so much from books, from podcasts, from videos, from blogs. You can only learn so much. You got to go out there, take action, get involved, because we're in the renovation business, right? Like the reposition of these assets. And if you don't know what you're talking about, some of these vendors and contractors will, I mean, eat you up.
Oh, yeah.
So you have to know what you're talking about.
Eat you up with money and time.
Money, time.
They say they'll get out there and then they don't get out there for like 2 or 3 weeks.
Dude, yeah.
That's money.
Or the AC guy is just pretending he's putting more Freon when it doesn't need Freon.
Yeah.
Because it needs to be changed when you can just change a part and it's working for another 6 to 8 months. You have to kind of know like at least a little bit, or at least someone on your co-GP team needs to know what's going on.
Yeah, for sure. I just had they wanted to change out one of our oil tanks. We just acquired a property. And so, you know, they say they need to come inspect it, even though they were delivering to it a week ago. And so they come in and they say, oh, we need to replace this. Do you really? You just were delivering last week and like, yeah, but we can't deliver oil again until it's replaced.
Yep.
You got to know these things. That comes through either personal experience or like you said, co-GP experience.
Right.
But to talk renovations, man, I feel like not having that vertically integrated can be one of the bigger detriments, just because in my opinion, one of the biggest costs is turnover, and that can lead to vacancy if you're just not flipping things fast. So if you can talk on that, how you guys kind of control that process, because to me, that can make or break you. If you got like what we do, you and I, we're turning properties, renovations, right? Value add, as people call it. That requires a plan that needs to be executed. So if you could just touch on how you guys kind of control that process.
Yeah. So in the beginning, we put a business plan together. For example, we bought 280 units a year ago, deep value add, CapEx deployment was 1.3 million. And I mean, we had to make that work. We needed more money than that, but we had to make that work for the deal.
Yeah.
So when you don't have an overflow of cash, you have to be even more like specific as to how you want to deploy that money. So what we did was we put how many units we want to remodel. I built scopes of work for every single unit that we're going to remodel. We chose some of the worst ones. That way we take care of the worst ones first. And then, you know, put in there each line item of materials, how much it's going to cost, how much it's going to cost for labor, flooring, appliances. And so before we even started, this is all before we even started, we had an idea more or less how it was going to play out. Of course, it goes in different angles and directions, but we had a plan in the beginning, right? And so I definitely recommend that we had our list of vendors. Don't just rely on one guy, or don't just rely on your uncle's friend that you guys have been friends with forever, cousin who owns a construction company. Like you're in the business to get the best price with the most quality work for the asset, for your investors. Sometimes when you're bringing your cousin or your friend who owns a construction company, you're not doing anyone a favor but him. So you have to kind of get a few vendors, a few plumbers, a few electricians, a few, you know, skilled laborers. So, I mean, we sub it out. So me and my partner have construction experience, a lot of it. And we kind of know how to sub things out. We don't need a GC. So we have a lot of control, but we also have a lot of feedback from our leasing agents and from our managers and telling us, hey, the gray schemes are, you know, are selling, or hey, can we remodel the 3-bedroom instead of the 2-bedroom? Because I already have a line of 4 people waiting that are willing to pay X. So like we hear our managers, we hear our leasing agents, and that's kind of how we start go about it. But, you know, we were remodeling 10, 15 units a month on this property. So, you know, we had to be involved and choose the right fixtures, get creative, accent walls, modernizing things, recessed lighting, daylight. The 5,000K really helped sell units and really just stay on top of it and not paying the contractor until he's done. Because, you know, we did have some people run off the job site and we had to figure it out. So you have to, you know, be very involved, build the scopes of work, and also train your manager. If you're doing third party, they don't know how you want to execute. Maybe they just want to replace the appliances because they want black instead of white, but it'll rent at white with white appliances, maybe at like $50 less in rent, but it'll still rent with white appliances compared to us needing to spend $1,000 on black ones just because you want. So you have to let them know kind of what your expectations are. And also my managers sometimes come to me and say like, hey, Adrian, you wanted to do a new ceiling fan. You wanted to do the refinish on the tub and the refinish on the countertop, but I was able to get away with not refinishing the countertop and not putting the fan, but I put this light fixture here in the dining room that I knew was going to sell. And I still got the same rent. Nice. That's what you want your managers. You want them to know.
You want them to think like you, like a business owner. Like, correct. I think that's true. It takes training and you're most likely not going to get that from third party because that's not how they train them. They train them. Third party is a business. They just want to feed you to death. And that's obviously not advantageous to your NOI. Yeah. No, but I like that mentality of training them like that. And it's not just renovating and turning units just for the sake of it, but it's for what's best for what the market's asking for and what's best for the property. I like that mentality. I feel like a lot of people don't look at it that way. It's just, hey, we have 3 million in CapEx. Let's go spend it, right? I like to look at ROI. Like, okay, if I put X dollar into this unit and I can get X dollar increase per month, well, what's that return? I hope it's above 20%. And to your point, if they could just change a light, instead of resurfaced countertops and bathrooms, it's going to be way above 20% return for that same increase. That's very smart.
For like signage and landscaping and exterior paint, you have budgets, right? So for exterior paint, let's say 100K, but you can get it done for 80, then that 20 goes back to the unit interiors. If you can get the landscaping done for multiple thousand dollars less, move it into unit interiors where it's going to pay, right? I mean, the unit interior, the rents is the highest ROI you're going to get, right? I mean, of course, you want to focus on curb appeal and structure and just the bones. But if you don't need to do certain things and still get the same value, move that money over to unit interiors and keep going, keep remodeling, keep going. Yeah. We do adjust and we work very closely with like our lenders, asset management team, construction team to like on calls every month and do the draws and let them know how we're reallocating numbers. We need more money for this. So it's a very involving process, but I can sleep at night knowing that I know where the money's going. I know what I'm doing. And not relying on someone else.
Yeah, for sure. And you kind of touched on this, and I think I already know your answer just because I've seen some of your properties. But to your point, the biggest ROI comes from the units themselves, renovating those. But what is your thoughts on exteriors in common areas? Like, I know there's some investors that if they don't have to, they won't touch that and just put all money into units themselves.
Yeah, definitely. If you're taking over a property, it depends on the asset, right? If you're taking over a C, they have bad reviews online, deep stuff that you got to go in there and fix, then you want to change the curb appeal. You want to change to make sure that people know that it's a different asset. It's a different property. So some of the first things that we do, we go in there, clean the landscaping, major overgrown tree branches, any sort of dead plants, overgrown stuff. We go in there and do a major landscaping cleanup before we even go in there and start raising rents. I mean, this is some of the first things that we do. Go in there, do that. Once that's done, we pressure wash all the hallways, all the windows. This also helps in the beginning, people start cleaning out their balconies because we put notices about pressure washing. So they'll start cleaning their balconies, their patios, all the overgrown stuff that they have plants. I mean, so it's a major cleanup in the beginning. And if it has bad branding, we change the branding. We think of a name, change the branding, go online, take some nice photos. Once we're done with landscaping and pressure washing, the way the building is already, we take some nicer photos at least, and then change the branding and go on apartments.com and change it all up.
Yeah.
I mean, if there's a budget for exterior, we'll do, depending on how big our budget is, if we're not going to paint the brick, only the siding, then we'll start looking into painting the siding, maybe fixing the rotten siding, you know, before we start painting. I think that's important to do and have the guys follow each other. While you're remodeling units, you have to have crews. You have to have multiple crews that you're working with. And the lighting, exterior lighting is huge for our properties. You want to make sure that the property is lit at night. We even install more lighting, like from the ground pointing at the buildings. And so,
yeah, give that nice welcoming feel.
Yeah, of course. Cameras, leasing office, amenities. We'll put like pool furniture out, string lights, the hanging lights from one fence to the other fence. It makes it look good. Those are connected to like a sensor plug that has a sensor. So, yeah, I mean, we go in there and do a lot of exterior, but you know, at the same time, while you're doing this exterior stuff, don't get caught up in changing the way the property looks. Like, I mean, it's to raise the rents, raise the income, remodel units, and don't lose focus on that.
Yeah. What I've seen you guys do that I like is the art that you put on the side of the building.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Because I think to your point, like when people are driving by, if you're just focusing on the units, they're not going to know anything's happening at that property. Nope. I think so. Cleaning it up, but then the art too, I think that even magnifies that.
Yeah.
Too. So that's cool, man. You've had me thinking about doing that. So
yeah. I mean, it's definitely in the beginning, it was like hard to get used to and it was like kind of risky. Like we're just going to go up and paint the whole building. Right.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Our artist is really good. He's gotten a lot better and he has an amazing track record. And one thing we started realizing is that, you know, in some of the markets that we're in, people aren't doing that. People aren't being unique. People aren't doing things like that. So people want to live at properties, even if it's just like it's new to the culture, new to the people around. Like they still like to tell their friends like, hey, I live in the art building, like in the property that has art.
Right.
Girls, they feel like proud. Some of them I have heard. So yeah, I mean, it's also our signature stamp that we leave and investors like it.
I love it, man. So what do you look for in a property?
Yeah. So right now, so I mean, I think it's changed in the beginning to now.
Yeah.
Right now we're looking for B's and B areas, secondary, primary markets. Garden style, central air, enough parking, a pool, some green areas, 100 plus units, no cap on price. I mean, we've bought 26 million, I think is the highest purchase we've done so far. And yeah, with value add, right? I mean, you know, we're buying this 200 unit, similar to what I just said right now in San Antonio, but it's 100% occupied and the rents are low. So, you know, we do look for opportunities where we can go in and increase the value and increase operations and refine everything and do our leasing strategies and branding. And we have success with it. So we do look at value add deals still. No class A appreciation plays, no more C class deep value add. I definitely want to
graduate from that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, my age is probably not where my true age is. So, so yeah, those C's are to blame for it, but or also, you know, something we're looking at too, and we've done before is like a 42 unit with one investor and we own it majority and investor owns a majority, but we've structured it too before where like we can start paying down the investor to eventually go 60-40 or 50-50. So I want to start, you know, doing more JVs, smaller deals. I'm also wholesaling. I have a 16 unit under contract that I'm wholesaling right now in Houston. So we do a little bit of both, man. I mean, we're not really looking to scale the syndication 30 investor business. I'm really not trying to scale that. I want to take it more intimate in-house and more control.
Yeah. And I think to do that, I think you're set up perfectly for that. I think to do that, you need to be vertically integrated. It just makes sense. Because you got to scale like that with just you, you need to keep everything in-house, right? And not be paying, you know, everyone. So, man, I believe in you. I think that'll probably happen quicker than you think.
Yeah. Thanks, man.
Yeah, man. But yeah, this market. So let's talk about the market. You've got this 200 unit under contract. But like, do you have anything else in the pipeline? Where are you seeing things go?
Yeah. So we definitely have a lot of leads. The leads is not a problem. It's really just choosing what we want to take down. And so definitely different times in the market, different times in private investors' life. So it's a lot more challenging to raise money than it was a year or 2 years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll just be clear with that. I mean, it's about the same people that were willing to invest in your deal a year ago to invest again or today because it's just different. There's a lot of fear in the market. Interest rates have risen tremendously and there's some international wars going on.
Yeah.
I don't even know.
So, Banks collapsing.
I mean, and what's happening too is that the sellers aren't coming to realization that their values are getting compressed every single day. And so there's a weird balance between what sellers think their property's worth and what it's truly worth. And also the uncertainty, the exit, because your deals rely a lot on your exit, right? The numbers. So how is it going to look in 5 years? There's some people who just don't know. So you just have to have confidence still and know your product, know what you're offering. But yeah, so we have 300 units under contract right now. We've had to raise $12 million and it's a tremendous challenge. and we've had to exercise extensions. So right now, you guys make sure what you want to, you know, start building extensions in your PSAs, because
for sure
you're going to need them. And so we're having just some challenges raising money, but we're going to get it done. And yeah, just making sure we're picking good assets.
Yeah, man. What about on the debt side? How are you seeing things from a lender perspective? Has that tightened up as well?
So it definitely has gone up. I mean, we bought a deal a year and a half ago at a 4.3, I think, 4.4 Fannie. And now we are locked. We're rate locked on 5.3s. So, I mean, it went up, but we locked it a few months ago. And I'm hearing people still lock Fannie's IO 30-year AMs for 5.4 or 5.5. So, I mean, that's kind of what you're going to be seeing for stabilized assets. Now, those bridge loans, that's kind of where you're going to, we have a couple of those floating rates. It's not the funnest thing, but you just got to make sure you're picking the right debt and know when you're going to exit, what's your structure, what's your strategy, and get multiple options. Use a loan broker to get multiple options. That way you have everything on the table. But we're still getting Fannie debt, 5.3, 6 years of IO, 30-year AM. I mean, yield maintenance, you got to be careful with that. But yeah, I mean, it's still the same thing, man. I mean, it's still really the same thing. The cash on cash returns are probably going to be a little bit less, but
LTV is less. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, your investors have to be okay with that, because it's just different times in the market. You can't expect to get the same cash on cash as you did a year or 2 years ago. We're still modeling, you know, 100% ROI, but the cash on cash is what some people look at as well. So you just have to know your investor, know your avatar, know your asset, and get good debt.
Yeah. It's about educating them for sure. Just to let them know this is where the market's at.
Yeah.
And man, like, I was talking to someone about this earlier today. It's, we were spoiled the last 3+ years, right? So we were lucky to get some of those returns, and now it's coming back to average, right? And it's still great returns. Like, tell me where else you're going to get 12 to 16% average annual return.
Yep.
Not going to get it in the stock market, definitely not going to get it in the bond market. So where are you going to get that?
Yep.
All right, man. Well, what's the future look like for Adrian? Like, what's that look like? I'm picturing big things, but I want to hear from you.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, multiple thousands of units, definitely keep growing the portfolio, keep growing the team. We have launched our fund on our end, not live yet, but on our end, we're starting to build that out. Multifamily related, B-class, C-class value add across the major markets. We want to definitely hedge our bets across different assets and build a track record to be able to do that. So we definitely want to raise capital while we're looking for off-market deals and really refine our systems, refine our operations, our asset management. I mean, travel, continue to travel. That's one of my hobbies, and scuba dive and all the major exotic parts of the world. And give back, man, give back. I mean, I definitely get excited to give back to other people, help other people in real estate, just give them advice, give them tips. And give back to the less fortunate as well. That's definitely on my bucket list, and continue to grow the brand, man, and grow the team.
Love it, man. Yeah. I love having a purpose that's bigger than yourself, right? And I think that's how you really grow, when you're more thinking outward. I know, I can tell that's who you are, and it's cool to watch, man. Yeah. This has been fun, but I usually end it with 4 questions, which I'll get into. But before that, how can people get a hold of you?
Yes. I guess the most active on Instagram, you guys reach out, and there's a link there on my bio. You can see more about me and reach out to me, schedule a call. And I mean, that's it. That's how you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, starting to get a little bit more active on LinkedIn, but yeah, online, social, and reach out. Love to help.
Love it. How old are you?
27.
Dude, I don't know why I feel 3,000 units by 30. And hey, I might be undercutting too. You might blow by that, but
I think that's underhitting for sure.
Yeah. It might be more like 5 or 6.
Yeah, 5 is the number. 5 is what's on my paper.
Love it, man. Love it. That's the thing about this business too, is it just snowballs. Like, it starts off a little slow, but then it just compounds.
Right.
All right, man. Well, the final four, it's March Madness right now. So that kind of rings true. We got the final 4 questions. So the first is, why multifamily real estate as an investment vehicle? And kind of part B to that is, what kind of life has it afforded you?
Yeah. So why multifamily? I get excited when I have to talk about that. But I think being in single family, well, being in direct sales, I learned how to sell, you know, great active income, transactional income. You can build a business doing that. I truly believe selling, learning how to sell, learning how to build rapport is one of the highest paying activities you can ever learn. And so then I got into single family, and it was a smaller scale. I had to be all over the place and all over the map. There's thousands of houses. You're dealing with homeowners who... It was not fun dealing with homeowners. tell you that much. I had to be a therapist. Yeah, yeah. I had to help him move out. I had to find him another home. I had to do a lot of stuff. And I didn't like it, man. It wasn't scalable. And then when I got into multifamily, I started realizing the sellers were sophisticated investors. Like, they were millionaires. They spoke the language and they spoke numbers and they were more open to selling. Sell at the right price, right? How can we make the numbers work? And these people have money. And not only that, but the debt was cheaper. It was easier to get the debt and value add. I mean, you could buy a deal, raise rents $25, 25 times 100 units divided by the cap rate in the area. I mean, you're exponentially increasing the value of the asset over years and building your net worth, even as an LP. I mean, building your net worth in multifamily, and you have multiple tenants paying rent. And not only that, but one of the worst crisis is COVID. We collected 98% of the rents, we're 98% full, and the government was sending people checks to pay the rent. It's recession proof. I mean, like, it's a hedge against inflation. It's a hedge against risk in the market, because people will always need a place to live. And not only that, so there's tax benefits. We hire a cost segregation company to come in and accelerate the depreciation on the building. And we haven't paid taxes legally in the last 3-4 years. It's truly because of the depreciation on the real estate. Every year you buy real estate, an apartment building, you can accelerate it, right? But that clock is ticking. There was 100% last year. There's 80% this year, 60% following. So all the way until it gets to zero. So take advantage of that. And the scale. We've been able to scale to close to 1,000 units now in a few years. And you can truly retire, live life on your own terms. So that's why multifamily. And I mean, it's definitely created financial freedom in my life. I'm financially independent. My net worth, I hit 1 million a few years ago.
Let's go.
It's scalable, man. I mean, it's really the real deal. You just have to focus and educate yourself. Take action.
Yeah. Couldn't agree more. All right, man. Number two, what is a common mistake that you see real estate investors make? And it could be something that you made as well.
Yeah. I think people overthink what it takes to actually do a deal in the beginning. Like, the people starting off, like, you don't need to know it all. You don't need to know how to underwrite. You don't need to know. I mean, just know enough to get started and then take action while you're learning more. So don't wait to take action until you feel comfortable, because you're never really going to feel comfortable. I mean,
yeah.
You just got to get in. You got to get in and get surround yourself. Listen to the podcast. I mean, there's a lot of free content. I see a lot of people making this mistake of not going online and looking for free stuff. I mean, don't think you have to pay $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 for a coaching program and that's going to be the magic wand. There's information out there that you can learn for free to get started, and start learning now, because there will be blood on the streets, and they're already starting to be more blood on the streets. But the best time to buy real estate is when it's discounted. So if you don't know how now, make sure start educating yourself so you can be prepared when there's a lot of blood on the streets. So yeah, educate yourself more.
Yeah.
That's the mistake that I would have made.
Yeah. Don't get me started on the courses, man. You got don't get me wrong, people. It's great to have mentors, but need to drop, like Adrian said, 50, 60 grand. There's YouTube, there's podcasts. And to your earlier point of just take action, you don't need to know everything ahead of time. Man, I wish I heard that when I was starting, because that was me. I tell people it took, from when I started taking action, it took me 1.5 years to get to over 400 units. But before that, it was 6 years of just spinning wheels, thinking I needed to know more or meet the right people. It's like, that's not true. So I couldn't agree more with that. All right, man. Well, no, you kind of already answered this one, but number three, what gets Adrian going? Like, what do you like to do on your free time?
Work. I'm building the business. I'm always building the business. I'm always networking. I'm always trying to grow the brand, trying to grow myself personally. Of course, fitness, waking up early, cold plunges, saunas. I mean, biohacking, all that stuff is really fascinating for me. And personal development, I'll put on a tape, Napoleon Hill, I'll read his books. I do that for fun. But what gets me going is really seeing what I can do, right? Like, and what I'm capable of, and pushing myself to limits that I would have never thought I could get through. And then coming out on the other side of them and winning. So, I mean, that's definitely what gets me going, and being able to like give back to my family, being able to travel the world with cool people and really just control my own destiny, man. Like, I am my own boss. Like, I control my outcome. So that's what gets me going.
Love it, man. All right. Last question of the final four. And I don't know if this really pertains to you, man, because you started at 17 years old. But anyways, the question is, because I do two shows a week. One is on multifamily every Monday. And then my background's in finance. So I do a finance Friday show every Friday, Finance Friday. So this question is, if you had a time machine and you could go back in time and tell your younger self one piece of personal finance advice, what would that be?
Yeah. I would have started in multifamily a lot sooner.
Okay.
So I did 4.5 years of wholesaling single family. So I would have definitely started with multifamily. And I also probably would have, I guess going back at it, I wish I would have spent more time doing personal development, because truly the more that I do, the more I get. So if I would have done more back then I would be getting more throughout my journey. So I would have started multifamily sooner and started to been more obsessed with personal development at an earlier age.
Yeah, I think that's something a lot of people overlook. It's 90% mindset, most everything we do, 20% actual knowledge and skill. Yep. So 100%. All right, man. Well, before I wrap it up, is there anything we didn't touch on that you'd like to chat about?
No, man. No, I mean, just take risks, calculated risks, take action, surround yourself with the right people, put yourself in the right rooms, do your homework. What really matters in this business is what you do when no one's looking. So take that to heart and don't feel like you have to be with a group in order to progress and move the needle. You move the needle the most when you're alone. So take that to heart and find a way to self-motivate yourself. I'll end it with this. There's a quote, Andrew Carnegie. I took it to heart. I should tattoo it somewhere on my body. But he says, people who are unable to motivate themselves must be content with mediocrity, no matter how impressive their other talents.
Wow.
How impressive any other skill, any other trait you have. If you can't find a way to self-motivate yourself when no one's looking, then you must be content with being average. And when I heard that, I was like, dude, this is it. Like, this is golden. So take that to heart.
Kobe Bryant stuff right there.
Yeah. So find a way to self-motivate yourself and you won't regret it. Let's go. 10X.
Love it, bro. All right. Wrapping it up here. Thanks, man. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks, bro.
And listeners, as always, easy does not pay well, and instant gratification is self-destructive. So not only get out there and work hard for your money, but have it work hard for you so we can all create those lives of our dreams, because that's how we make this world a better place. All right, catch you on the next one.
Hey, this is Sean Winslow. After being in the financial service industry for years and having candid conversations with good people just like you, I realized that so many of us are wanting an investment strategy that provides solid returns and consistent income without the bumps in the road. There's little known secret that your financial advisor doesn't want you to know. There is an investment out there that is less volatile and the returns are stronger. Get more details by going to greenbriercg.com and clicking on the free e-report. And by the way, if this show has provided you any value, then feel free to leave an honest written review and, of course, share it with a friend who needs it. See you next week for another great show.